Welcome to Matchroom Radio with David Diamante. And this week we're live from Dallas for what promises to be an action-packed world title triple header. Headlining Saturday's show, Juan Francisco Estrada, El Gallo, and Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez in a rematch of their epic 2012 battle. Two-division undefeated champion from Japan, 14-0 with 9 knockouts, Hiroto Kiyoguchi. He makes his Matchroom debut, Mad Boy, putting his WBA light flyweight title on the line versus El Mini, Axel Aragon Vega, and of course, the much anticipated rematch, the undisputed welterweight rematch between Catskill Jessica McCaskill and the First Lady of Boxing, Cecilia Brackhus. So I'm your host, David Diamante, and I'm delighted today to be joined by the challenger in that 147-pound mega fight, Cecilia Brackhus, her promoter, Tom Loeffler, and of course, her trainer, Abel Sanchez. So it's great to see you guys. How's everyone doing? How are you guys keeping?
We're doing great. We finished up a great training camp. You know, we got my weight done, got feeling good, looking forward to Saturday, looking forward to get my belts back. Pretty much.
This has been a tough time for everybody, obviously. How have you guys dealt with the pandemic? Have you guys learned any new crazy skills? Can you bake some type of intense, amazing cookies? Or have you guys learned, what have you guys been doing during the pandemic? How's it been for you guys?
Well, I know how to be in Big Bear alone for 6 months.
I think in training camp, it's no different for us because we're all confined to our place and in the stores, which are close by. What's been different for this particular fight is the bubble has been different. The bubble in Oklahoma was very difficult. This has been a little more relaxed here, so I think that everybody's in a better mood, I think. But I meant to tell you this afternoon, Cecilia, your face looks so bubbly, so fresh. Doesn't it?
Thank
Does she
you,
look
Coach.
Happy? No, you do. Wow.
Yeah,
you do.
She looks happy, yeah. Dave, it's great to be here. It's great to see you. We haven't seen each other for a long time since the whole thing started. And, you know, it's been challenging for everyone. This is tremendous, like you said, tremendous show, but it's going to be a treat having fans actually in the arena. You know, Texas opened up significantly, and this is the first show that I'll be involved with that has fans. So that'll be nice. You have the ring card girls again. You have the media was at the press conference, a weigh-in. So things are slowly starting to come back to normal, you know, quote unquote normal. You know, we're out in California, which has been really shut down for quite some time. But Abel alluded to this bubble is much more relaxed, not relaxed. It's still strict in terms of safety, but food, being able to walk down to the lobby, being able to walk to the restaurant, ordering your food at the restaurant, as opposed to Oklahoma and Tulsa, which was one of the first shows back. So it's understandable, but you know, basically Cecilia couldn't see Abel for 2 days after arriving. She could only eat out of the plastic bags that were hung on the door, making weight. And so I think you'll see, you know, as Abel said, Cecilia's bubbly. She's happy. She made weight really well. She's able to eat now. And I think you'll see a tremendous, not only from her fight, but all the fighters. It's a tremendous show.
Yeah, it's great, and it's great to see all of you guys. We're going to talk about, Cecilia, we're going to talk about your upcoming fight just in a second, but I do want to take a second to talk about the landscape of women's boxing right now. I mean, there's so many names. Katie Taylor, Terry Harper, Amanda Serrano, Heather Hardy, Claressa Shields, of course. You know, also there's a lot of new school fighters coming up, Savannah Marshall, Ellie Scottney, Chantel Cameron, Natasha Jonas, Shannon Courtney, Ramla Ali. You have to be really proud as, you know, being kind of, I don't want to say the flag bearer, but one of the main flag bearers of women's boxing. How do you feel about that? How does it make you feel?
Yeah, for me, it's amazing. Like you said, when I started out, women boxing was really frowned upon. You know, I was very young. I was told to leave it alone, to not do boxing. That was back at a time when it was frowned upon for women to have muscles. You know, I'm talking way, way back now. I was, you know, people would stop me in the street because they was wondering, you know, looking at my muscle, and they was wondering, what are you doing? You know, and you know, sometimes it got so bad that I actually felt just to cover up because I wanted to be left alone. So, you know, being big, masculine woman, that was not the ideal at that time. And then things changed slowly. I think the biggest breakthrough was when women was allowed into the Olympics. It took us 100 years, which is an absolutely travesty. After that, the ball just started rolling, and I never went to the Olympics, unfortunately, but I'm very proud that myself, together with thousands of other women you will never hear the name of, that we went to the European champion, we went to world championship, we did not get, you know, we didn't make money, we did it only for the love of boxing, and we would not have a chance to go to the Olympics either. But fast forward, we are here. I mean, I think it's very special for me because I've been on both sides. So I'm just extremely happy and proud, and you know, all the women, you know, who gets in the ring and gets attention, gets a good promotion. It's just, it makes my day, it makes me so happy. Even Clarissa Shields.
Just won the second undisputed title. You were the first, of course. Tom, if you could put your promoter hat on just for a second, is there a moment in the past, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years where you think this breakthrough really happened?
Well, Dave, I've always been a big supporter of women's boxing, even before I met Cecilia. I was helping Lucia Riker when she was fighting with Emmanuel Stewart. We put Layla Ali on two shows, one at Madison Square Garden, where her father, Muhammad, was there in attendance. She fought as the co-feature with Vladimir Klitschko there at the Garden, and she also fought in Berlin, where Muhammad was also in attendance. So I've always been a big supporter of women's boxing, and Cecilia is a true ambassador for the sport. She said she didn't have the opportunities in the amateurs as she was coming up, but she really opened up a lot of doors, especially in Europe. And single-handedly, I have to say, a lot of people don't know it over here, but professional boxing was banned in Norway, and she almost single-handedly, because she had developed a relationship with the prime minister over there, she's an undisputed world champion, she could fight anywhere in the world, but she couldn't fight in her home country, which was patently unfair. And so the prime minister allowed Cecilia to fight in Norway. She sold out the arena twice, a 10,000-seat arena on pay-per-view, and chose to come over here to the United States to increase her awareness, her career popularity, and actually broke down the 45-year glass ceiling on HBO, being the first woman ever on HBO on the Triple G show that we did, and then also to headline. And it's a kind of a unique circle because Cecilia headlined the last HBO show, and Estrada was on the undercard of Cecilia. Now Estrada, naturally, with Chocolatito is the main event, and Cecilia is the co-feature. So boxing is a small circle. And with Cecilia, with Layla, you know, Clarissa's a tremendous fighter. I just, you know, wish she would give more credit to the people that opened the doors for her, which she's tremendous. She's, like you said, a two-time undisputed world champion. It just, you know, instead of comparing yourself to other people, I think what Cecilia does is compliments the other people. And then I think that just opens the doors for the sport of women's boxing.
I agree with everything you said. There's a lot of great stuff. We're going to touch on some of those things and some of those achievements. I do want to ask you, Abel, you guys have been together since 2019, is that correct?
Actually, I want to add a little bit to what the previous question there. I think the breakthrough came when people started to realize that a lady with class could fight like Cecilia does. A lady with class. No? Anyway, we met actually about 4 or 5 years ago in Vegas on a...
Yeah, don't tell
about that. No, nothing bad. No, we met in Vegas. She attended one of our it wasn't one of our shows. No, it was when Shafikov fought.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, and we had a chance to, after the fight, they had an after party, and Cecilia was there with Tom, and we got a chance to meet and talk a little bit, and it was maybe another year and a half before Tom reached out to me and asked me if I was interested. Of course, I mean, you're talking about the best fighter in the world, best female fighter in the world, and undisputed champion. Of course, I'm gonna say yes. And she's been a pleasure to work with, and I think it all stems from, again, is from she's a fighter, but she's also a lady in outside of the gym. In the gym, she's a fighter and she's a boxer, and she's gonna deal with the men that are in the gym just like they would deal with each other. She's not gonna take any shit from anybody. But it was easy working with her because her work ethic is the kind of work ethic that I like.
Cecilia is actually the first female boxer that Abel has agreed to train. Abel's very selective with who he trains, and the way that came about, it's almost, again, boxing is a closed circle, where Jonathan Banks, who I have a very close relationship with, I managed Jonathan when he was fighting with Vladimir Klitschko under K2 Promotions, and when JB agreed to train Triple G, Cecilia was concerned, like, okay, Triple G naturally is going to take out the priority most of the time, and then she asked me, is Abel available? And I felt a little bit awkward because Abel's never trained female boxing. Not that he didn't support it, he just never trained a female boxer. So he agreed to train Cecilia, and that's how that all came about. So Cecilia is actually the first female boxer that Abel has trained, which is pretty unique.
Again, living up to your name of the first lady in boxing, because that's, you got that name from Sauerland Promotions, right? Because you were their first, you were their first lady, and you're now the first lady. And I'll let you go ahead and add something.
Yeah, that's funny because I got the name when I came to Germany many, many years. I moved to Germany because professional boxing was illegal. And since I was the first woman to be with Sauerland Promotion, I got the name First Lady. And after that, they have like 8-9 girls signed to them and world champions. They have a young, extremely talented champion now who will come up. So, you know, stuff like that is great for me to watch. About the gym, you know, girls drive for hours to come to the Summit Gym and to Big Bear to do sparring and to experience that. Because there's so much history, there's so much, for them, it's a big treat to come. So I've been sparring with young girls who's now going to compete in the Olympics, for the Olympics. I've been sparring all these young, amazing, talented. I mean, the talent for the next generation just overwhelms me. So whatever happens, you know, I feel like a winner anyway.
Well, I can agree with you. You're definitely a winner. I wanted to follow up, Abel, with the questions, because I know that, like you said, Cecilia's the first woman that you were training. Were you a fan? First of all, were you a fan of women's boxing before this? Number two, do you find it any differences training a female fighter with, let's say, 2-minute rounds, 10-round fights, things like this? Is there anything kind of different with that, and how have you found it?
Actually, back in the 90s, I was had the privilege of working in the corner, working cuts and wrapping hands for Christy Martin, several fights. So I've been around the ladies, and of course I'm a fan. I'm a fan of fighters. I'm a fan of the attitude that they bring. They work, I don't want the men to get mad, but they work harder than the men. They work harder than the men because they feel like they have this, something they have to prove. All the pioneers that I've been able to be around, which is Christy, and I was around Layla a little bit, and now Cecilia, it's so much fun to see the effort that they put in. And for a coach, that's what you want. You don't want to be training a guy that's 20-0 and doesn't want to train, you know, and doesn't want to really give you the effort. It's a little bit different. The rounds are different, obviously. It's a little bit different because you have to the sparring is the hardest part because it's so difficult to get quality sparring. There's a lot of young girls that are coming up that are not quite at the level where if Gennady needed sparring, we were able to get guys at a top level to come in and spar. Where with the women, it's a little different because there's not that talent out there. But as Cecilia said, we had 4 or 5 girls in our gym. There's one that's turning pro, in fact, in April. She's a little southpaw that's the sister of the Towering Inferno, Sebastian Pandora. Yes, she's a sister, and she's exceptional. She is exceptional. So, the talent that is that we were able to bring into our gym, I was proud of the fact that Cecilia took the time. That's so important. I think that very few people understand the idea of helping the ones below you to be able to. So the sport will grow. And Cecilia took the time to help all these girls, not only in the sparring, but after the sparring, she would sit down with them and just talk and philosophy, talk boxing, talk all the aspects that it takes to be where she's at. I'm extremely proud of what we've done, but extremely proud of where this sport has come since I worked with Christy.
And I just want to echo the sentiment because, you know, knowing you, Abel, and spending time talking with you, you're talking about her character, and you're someone of the highest character. And Tom, like you said, he doesn't just take anyone on. So when you take someone into your stable, it's a huge, it's a great endorsement of their character. Talking of Big Bear, so, you know, being Norwegian, your country, they're big in nature therapy, right? They understand how cathartic and how therapeutic nature can be. You're up in Big Bear. You know, your country also does a great job preserving nature, which is wonderful. You've said that, you know, Big Bear to you just felt like home. It felt natural. Does it remind you of home at all? Are there any kind of, I mean, also another thing they say is Norwegians are born with skis on their feet, right? Do you ski, and have you taken Abel down any double diamond slopes? Because I know they have ski resorts up there.
I love to ski, and we are 5 minutes away from a ski resort, and of course I can't put on skis when I'm in camp because it's so, you know. So that is pure torture. But coming up there, you know, and just when you get that, when you just get that fresh air and see the mountains and the trees, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I was pretty overwhelmed. It's very powerful to be there. And then you start training, and then you're like, whoa, this is completely different than anything else I have done before in my whole life, you know, training in such high altitude. So that is on top of everything else, the training, that is like a mental something you just have to overcome. And I know there have been people who hasn't done that and has gone back. So, you know, I just wanted to go through it. I'm not going to lie. The first camp, the first week was hell. But when you just push through, you know, it's so worth it.
Abel, you set up Big Bear in 2011 after a heart attack. That's what I understand. Is that correct?
I actually started the building in 1999. Batala started the building. And the reason I started it really was for Emmanuel. I thought Emmanuel could use it because he was up there with Oscar. In fact, that's why this is here. Emmanuel was the type of, he had the type of business where he couldn't be in one place for too long. You would have needed a jet, a helicopter and a jet there for him to take off on a moment's notice. So it was very difficult for him to stay up there. Once he stopped training Oscar, then I wasn't really interested in opening up a gym. I set up the building for it to be a gym, but I didn't want to open up a gym. I had retired. I was just doing construction. Then in 2008, 2007, 2008, my son and I, my youngest son and I decided to open up a gym because we saw the economy, the housing slowing down for us. I'm a general building contractor and I could see the business slowing down. So we decided to go ahead and set up the gym, or a private gym, and just lend it to my friends. Late 2008, Oscar used it for his last fight against Pacquiao. And then people started finding out there was a gym up there. I started getting calls about coming up and fighters about wanting me to train them. And before I knew it, I was back in it in 2009. And in 2010, April, Golovkin's managers called me and I met him and things changed. And then I really retired from construction and just kept my eye on doing the boxing. But I wanted it to be a place where it was a complex, where there's two houses there and somebody could come in like Cecilia or Oscar or Golovkin and just live there, train there. There's no excuses why the traffic was bad and you didn't make it on time. There's no excuses in the morning to go run. So it became really a hub, a family house for the people that were there because everybody, we had times like at 11, at 1, at 3, at 5. We have different times. When you have a lot of people, we have a lot of different times. So the people were they were watching TV together, they were cooking for themselves together, they were training together, they were running together, so it became a family. And it's become somewhere where when they go there, they're all rooting for each other. They're not competing against each other, they're rooting for each other, so it's a lot of fun to watch that.
Tom, as a manager and promoter, I mean, you must have seen some great sparring up at the Summit. And you must, I don't want to say rest easy, because you never can rest easy being a promoter and a manager, but you must feel good knowing your fighters are getting that great sparring up there. You know, can you tell us a little bit about what you've seen up there?
Absolutely, Dave. Actually, just to back up to Abel's question, it was funny because I met Abel originally when I was working with Obakar, who also came through the Kronk system from Detroit. And I met Abel, when was it, like 92, I think, 92, 93. And anyway, Oba had trained in Big Bear, and I remember Abel showing me these blueprints and like really like excited and a big smile on his face. Like, Tom, look, here's like this lot. I didn't see the lot, but I saw the blueprints, and he unrolled it and said, this could be like the future training camp, and really excited. And I'm like, okay, you know, that sounds cool. And then we kind of, you know, didn't lose touch, but I didn't have much contact with Abel then after Oba stopped fighting. And then all of a sudden it came up when Triple G was there and his managers called me, and then I went back up there and I saw the Summit, and it's really lives up to its name. Whenever someone's up there, you know, like Abel's always is very regimented, very structured, you know, in order. And it's not one thing I got to point out, Dave, it's not easy. A lot of fighters go up there, last about a week, and then they go back down. That's a long list of fighters, right? We'll leave the names out, but a long list of fighters. And it's not easy. You really need the dedication. And, you know, Triple G liked it because it reminded him of Kazakhstan, but it really is someone that's, when he said it was serious business, like if you're really seriously focused on training, and like Cecilia will tell you, there's no distractions up there. You can't go down to a nightclub. You can't go here. You can't, you know, it's just basically you wake up, you eat, you sleep, you wake up in the morning, you're running, you spar in the afternoon. And so it's kind of a magical experience up there with the altitude. And one of Cecilia's sparring partners, as Abel mentioned, she's going to the Nationals. And she didn't even want money. She flew in from New Mexico, from Albuquerque. And it was just like, I have the opportunity to train at the Summit gym with Cecilia Brecos. She's like, you know, when can I come? She wanted to go that day when I called her. And it's a really special place. And I'd have to say, you know, Abel always compares it to, okay, you're in boxing shape or you're in Big Bear shape. And when you're in Big Bear shape, you know, it takes about 10 days to get used to the altitude and to run. And whether it's snow or sun or whatever, the fresh air up there, it's tremendously conditioned athletes that come out of the Summit.
The tough part about being up there, other than it's not the altitude, I think it's the solitude. Because it takes an hour to get off the mountain. And most fighters that are there don't want to take that drive off the mountain. It's a winding road, and it's difficult to do it often. The other thing is, what I like to do up there is ask them to come up for 3 to 4 weeks. Ask them to come up just to see if they're going to, not only are they going to be able to adapt to it, but if they're going to be able to handle the solitude. The altitude you can get over in 10 days, but the solitude is probably the most difficult thing for them to handle. And if they and I want to see if we get along, if the work ethic and everything. So there's no reason to be married for 10 years if you don't get along. So the 3 or 4 weeks that they come up there, the worst thing that's going to happen is they're going to go away in great shape. That's the worst thing that can happen.
Chemistry is everything. And, you know, it's funny that you say that the solitude, not just the altitude, it's like boxing, right? It's the physical. You got to be in physical shape, but it's also the mental. So it's the mental, too. So you also have to train your brain. You know, today, Cecilia, I have to say, it was very strange calling you for the weigh-in and calling you the challenger. It was really, it was strange. It felt strange to me to say it, because it's just been so long since you've been, you know, reign supreme. It's been over 6 months now since Tulsa. You've had some time to reflect on that. You know, what are your thoughts now, and what are your thoughts on that fight? I'm sure you've had time to watch it back. What do you think now?
Well, I said it before, you know, I just wasn't myself, you know, and I think people saw the difference between me and Tulsa and me at the weigh-in today. I think everybody's a big difference, you know, and they start to understand. I think today, after all Jessica's talk, that this is definitely not a retirement party. It's far from that. I had a perfect camp. I'm happy. I feel strong. I'm hungry and just ready to take my belts back.
Abel, what tactical changes do you guys plan to make in this fight? And do you think Jessica will make tactical changes also? What changes do you think their team will make. And Tom making this fight, you know, was it just a case of exercising the rematch clause? You know, probably McCaskill got a bigger split because now she's holding the belts. What was that kind of situation like? Were there other options that you were thinking about, or was Cecilia just, no, this is the fight?
First for McCaskill, with as many fights as she has and the short career that she's had, it's going to be very difficult to improve dramatically in 6 months. She is who she is. She's going to come forward. I think tactical for us, the most important part for us is the fact that she didn't spend 6 months by herself or 7 months by herself in Big Bear. That was such a downer for her. And as she mentioned, as Cecilia mentioned, at the weigh-in, she looks different. She just has this different aura about her because she's not in the dumps. Cecilia's accomplishments, Cecilia's style, and what she's done in the past is all going to come through again tomorrow night. What we're going to do and what she's going to do, she's determined to show, mainly show herself, I think. She's got this thing inside that she knows she wasn't herself on that night in Tulsa. So as long as she does what she knows she can do and does her best, we're going to come out victorious. There's no doubt in my mind. As far as tactic, it's very difficult to change her brilliance from before in three fights. She's going to be who she is and be effective with what she's done in the past. And I said at the beginning of the interview, to look at her, she just looks so much different. You know, just her face just bubbly and fresh. And so I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, really.
In terms of making this fight, Dave, there really wasn't a different option. You know, I think everyone was in shock. Maybe Cecilia after the fight, and she congratulated Jessica. We all thought she won, or at worst, a draw, where she would have kept her titles and considered another defense. But, you know, that only lasted maybe 3 or 4 days. And, you know, I said, Cecilia, just let me know. We have the opportunity to do a rematch. And sure enough, after she had some time to reflect on it, she's like, yeah, I want my titles back. There's no other bigger fight out there where she can, in one fight, become the undisputed welterweight champion again. So she definitely wants to get her titles back. If she's successful tomorrow, then doors are wide open again for other fights. But this was her first priority, to get her titles back and then go from there.
Not if, but when she's successful.
And it's a great lead-in to something that I'm really curious about, because Cecilia, you know, we all watched that fight, obviously. It was a very close fight. Whoever anyone thinks won, it was a close fight. It seemed afterwards that you kind of were contemplating retirement. You know, it really did seem like that. And you were very gracious in the defeat and this and that. And then things started to change. It seemed like, I don't know if it's because Jessica was talking smack, or if you thought she was, or... And it's just, I don't think I've ever seen you as motivated as now for a fight to get these titles back. And you know, you've done so many things. You have such an incredible career. You've been so decorated. You know, I'm curious, like, what is after this for you? I mean, of course, you never want to look past a fighter. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, what more do you want in the sport? Is there a certain fight that you see out there? Is there something else that you want to do? What is kind of your long-term goal with this?
Well, first, now I want to take my belts back. You know, I was, my head was a little bit off the last fight. And I, you know, I haven't seen this was in the middle of a pandemic. I hadn't seen my friends, my family for 6 months. I've been thousands of miles away from them. You know, I was struggling with a little bit of guilt because of that too. But then I come home and they told me, just go back and just kick her ass. And I think it took 24 hours. Then she started to trash talk me. I have used years and years to, you know, to collect these belts together and to keep them. And it's not been easy at all. And I don't like to see a champion behave that way. So that was one of the parts to just take that decision that quickly. And in the future, I mean, for me right now to be, you know, just be able to be a part of something I always dreamt for women boxing and been waiting for 20 years, it's hard to just walk away from this. I always fought for it. I wanted it. I didn't know if it would happen, but here we are. And I see some big, big fights in the future for sure.
As a fan, that is very exciting to hear. I will say that. You know, Tom touched earlier on the fact that you were really instrumental in changing the knockout law in Norway. And for the people watching that don't know, boxing was banned for, was it 33 years, something like that? 33 years, I think. And you even would face a 3-year or a 3-month prison sentence if you were caught boxing. You know, and that was just major. You also... You had the big fight back in Norway with, like you said, the prime minister, and Klitschko was there. And you talk about how that was one of the greatest achievements of your life. I wonder if you still feel like that. And also, I'm really curious about, from what I understand, you started kickboxing at age 13. First of all, was that legal in Norway? Because that doesn't seem fair, number one. I love kickboxing, but... So that was legal. Okay. But how did you get turned on to boxing being in Norway where it was something that was illegal? And not only that, I want you to explain to the people out there, because I think this is really important. You know, you must have gone through some really dark times. Any trailblazer does. You know, like where your parents like, Cecilia, what are you doing? Like, you're a girl. You're not supposed to box, but you believed in yourself. And you boxed all over Germany, Sweden, the United States, but you couldn't box at home. You know, what made you stick through those dark times so that people that are listening, whether it's in boxing or just in life, men or women, boys or girls that are going through hard times trying to blaze a trail, how did you believe in yourself through those tough times and why did you do it and what was that like?
Well, I just wanted to change the boxing world, you know, and I wanted people to box without going to jail. Because I love boxing and I don't want to go to jail with it. And it's a beautiful sport and I don't want anyone else to go to jail for that either. So that was also a big motivation. It was definitely tough at the time. You know, At that time I was kind of like, you know, driven out of Norway and in Germany. So I was traveling back and forth and I was collecting all the belts together, you know. And it was exhausting at some times. It took a lot of energy, it took a lot out of me. But I mean, when I went into in the arena, we had sold out 10,000 tickets. And you know, my friend Klitschko was there and the prime minister, Michael Buffer, was introducing, you know, and I had the whole country behind me, you know. It was worth everything, every dark moment. It was amazing. I can't even describe it.
I think that there needs to be a movie about it. I mean, it's an amazing story. It really is. I have a question because I did the very first fight in Saudi Arabia, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So what I'm wondering is what were the fans like in Norway for that first fight? Surprisingly, in Saudi Arabia, the fans were pretty good. In fact, when there'd be some great punches, they would cheer. And then when there was like a lull in the action, they'd kind of boo. And I was like, this is like a New York crowd, or it was like a Philly crowd or a New York crowd. What were the fans in Norway like?
It was exactly the same in Norway. It was like they'd never done anything else. And this was the first boxing match in Norway in over 33 years.
Yeah. You know, another question I have regarding Norway is, you know, kind of the national mentality is kind of more like a community type thing and not really to be standing out for accolades, you know. And what's it like to be someone famous in Norway on the day to day? Is it hard for you? How do people treat you? What is that like?
Yeah, exactly. It's a small country. And well, when you are famous and when you know, of course, after the fights there and some other fights, everyone in Norway knew who I was. And you know, you can't go anywhere without being recognized, and I'm saying you cannot go anywhere. So coming to the States and be a little bit more like under the weather, no, under, you know, a little bit, yes, under the radar, thank you. English is my second language. that was actually quite nice. So I'm not doing this to be famous, like super famous. I just love this because I love boxing. You know, I love the challenging over here. And I think it's so much fun, you know. You know, you guys are crazy. I'm having a blast.
Norwegians are also very famous for having like a very healthy work-life balance, you know. Whereas, you know, like in America, we just work all the time. Or you guys have this great, you know, healthy work-life balance. But being a world champion is not really about that. You know, as we've talked about in Big Bear, you come to work. Where does that come from? You know, where does that drive come from in you? And when you do decompress, what does that look like? What does Cecilia Breakhouse do when she's off? You know, what music do you listen to? What TV shows do you like? What films?
Ooh, that's a lot of questions. first of all, I can just say when you decide to start with kickboxing as a girl, 13-year-old, you have to work. You know, you are thrown right into it. You have grown men telling you that, you know, you're not worth anything. So you just have to be tough. You have to be hard and you have to work hard. You can't show any weakness at all. So that's definitely where the grit is coming from. And then I moved to Germany, you know, and that was brutal. That was, you know, a regime from the old DDR, you know, the East Berlin regime. That was a brutal time. I was the first girl there too. So it was like a new culture, you know, new language. And it was definitely something that made me tougher. What I like to do in my free time. Well, when I was younger, I liked to party a lot, but now I'm too old for that. So I'm too tired to go out party, so I don't do that anymore. I'm just gonna stay home, watch a movie, and go to dinner, boring stuff like that. I like to travel too, you know. And get some adrenaline, you know, jump out of a plane, maybe try surfing, skiing, stuff like that. I watch different things. I watch really lame shows. I don't want to tell them here.
Tom, we talked about this HBO show in 2018. I mean, it was monumental at the time. Walk us through that process. What was that like with the executives? And kind of how did that, tell us about that process.
I did something smart, I gotta say. I sat Cecilia next to Peter Nelson at Madison Square Garden at a Triple G fight. And Peter became enamored with not only, he knew her boxing skills, but her character, her personality as an ambassador for the sport of boxing. And the way that whole thing came about was actually Triple G, if you remember, Triple G was supposed to fight Canelo in Las Vegas. It was going to be Chocotito was going to be on the co-feature. Cecilia was going to be on the show. And that's how that was going to be. It was going to be on pay-per-view. So it wasn't going to be on HBO. It was going to be our decision as a promoter. And we were going to decide to put Cecilia on. Then when that show got canceled and then the Munguia fight didn't happen in Las Vegas, then we had to go on regular HBO in Los Angeles. Chocotito had gotten injured. And that opened up the spot as the co-feature. I said, Peter, she was going to be on the show, and she took a risk. She continued to train and train and train. There was no guarantee that she was even going to be on the show or that even there was going to be a show. Abel, you remember that? It was like we were like pins and needles, and, I mean, it was all last-minute stuff. And so she persevered. She continued to train in L.A., and that's how she became the first woman on HBO. That was the co-feature, first of all, and then as the main event, that was just a huge highlight for her. And just to get back up onto one of the questions, you know, she's immensely popular in Norway. I think she downplayed it a little bit, but after the fight, you know, we went to, there was an after party, and she really was like a rock star there in the arena and everything like that. But she also has a lot of fans in Colombia. You know, she's born in Colombia. And so we get a lot of fan mail from Colombia for the fans, the boxing fans of Latin America that know that she's originally born in Colombia, and so she really has a worldwide reach to her boxing. And having Cecilia working with Cecilia is one of my proudest accomplishments, because as much as she struggled in terms of her boxing career and getting it legal in Norway, it was the same type of struggle in US TV to build her, especially on HBO. And now we're just happy that DAZN is carrying on the tradition. We're happy that Matchroom and Eddie has also seen that. And I think there's tremendous upside for the female boxing.
Couldn't agree more, absolutely. It's so many great fights coming up. Abel, I think it was 2015 you won the Eddie Futch, John Condon Trainer of the Year Award. I think I also was the one hosting the BWAA Awards that year, if I can remember correctly. What do those accolades mean to you? Do they mean anything to you, or is it more just, you know, the work that you do with the fighters and seeing what they achieve? You know, how do you look at that kind of stuff, these awards?
Those awards are nice, but I think that those awards are for your family. I seriously, they're for my children, they're for my wife. I think those awards are, I'm humbled by receiving it. But the biggest thrill for me, honestly, is to watch my fighter's face light up when they raise their hand. Whether it's the title, whether it's just the win, that is probably my highest moment for me. I feel like all the work put in and they achieve is like, they're like your children. Like their achievement, and they're smiling and they're happy, that's probably the best moments for me.
Great having you guys here. We've now reached a part of the show we called Rapid Fire Questions. So the fans send in questions. So here come the rapid fire. The first rapid fire is from Jules 7001. It's for Abel. He says, who are you training at the moment? Who should we be keeping an eye on?
That's a very good question. Well, I still have the WBA super cruiserweight champion, Arsene Goulamirian, who unfortunately lives in France, and it's difficult for him to come to the States. I also have Murat Gassiev. He's in Russia, and unfortunately he can't come to the States either right now, but he has fought his first heavyweight fight, and he'll be campaigning as a heavyweight. I know, I'm waiting for it too. Unfortunately, the times don't permit it. I also have Michel Soro, who's the gold 154-pound champion, who was supposed to fight Eris Landi Lara, and for some reason it couldn't be put together because he couldn't come here also. I have Rafael Simeon, who's 9-1 now. He's a light heavyweight. I have Louis Tutuan, who's 15-1. I have Andreas Kazariskis, who is 6-7-0, something like that. And there's a couple other youngsters in the gym. And of course, the cream of the crop, Cecilia Bricus.
The first lady of boxing. Okay, the next question is from Peter Fenton, and it's for Tom. He says, what's next for Triple G?
Triple G also fights on DAZN, and as of right now, there's nothing definitive in terms of a date or an opponent, but it looks like he's slated for June of this year.
The next question is for Cecilia. He says, it's from Irish Eyes Smile 24/7, and they ask, win this, and does a fight with Katie Taylor interest you down the line?
I know this being said a lot, but me versus Katie Taylor would be the biggest fight in women history. So the answer is, of course, yes.
Amazing fight. Would love to see it if you guys could meet at the weights. It's not too far off. Be amazing. Okay, Harvey Ellington asks Abel, I'd love to hear your pick on the potential AJ versus Fury fight. Who you got and why? Break it down. And he puts an exclamation point. Break it down.
To me, Tyson Fury is probably one of the most talented heavyweights that I had the pleasure of having him in my gym for 3 weeks. And this is a man that's 6'10" almost, that moves like a lightweight, very smart. I think his biggest issue, and he wouldn't have that with Anthony, is his biggest issue, he just seems to lose focus at times. Before he fought Wilder, the first time I was interviewed several times, and I said, you know what, he's gonna win 11 rounds and get knocked out in the 12th. And that almost came to fruition. I just thought that it's gonna be so easy for him that he's just gonna lose focus. Against Joshua, I don't think he'd lose focus. I think he beats Anthony Joshua in the decision. Although Joshua is a very, very good fighter, but I think Tyson Fury right now is the top of the heavyweights.
Yeah, he is amazing to watch. XPAC DEC asks Tom, you're sure to be watching Canelo versus Saunders with interest. Can Billy Joe cause Alvarez problems?
A lot of history. Also with the AJ and the Fury fight, they both fought Vladimir, so I was at both of those fights, so I know them very well. And like Abel said, Fury was up in Big Bear, so I got to know him, not on the adversarial side, but on the cordial side. But with Canelo Alvarez and Billy Joe Saunders, also have a lot of history with them. Billy Joe Saunders is the one fighter that escaped Triple G when we were trying to unify all the titles as undisputed champion. And he was the one WBO champion that we could never put a fight together for whatever reason. The one time that they had agreed, there was two times they agreed. One time was when we were going to do a fight in Kazakhstan during the expo, and they were going to spend a lot of money and promote this expo, World Expo 2017, and they were going to finance that. And then there was some conflict with UK TV. There was a big soccer game on the day that they wanted to do it in Kazakhstan. They couldn't move it up or back because of the expo, so that fight fell through. And then the second time was with the second Canelo fight, when we were having such a hard time making that second fight. We had Billy Joe Saunders. He did agree as, wouldn't say the backup opponent, but if Canelo didn't happen, Billy Joe was going to fight him. So I know Billy Joe very well. He came when Triple G went to England. He came to the press conference, and with Canelo, naturally, we know him very well. So we'll definitely be watching that fight. I think at this point at 168, Canelo's going to be very hard to beat where he's at right now. So I would predict, I have respect for Billy Joe, but I would predict that Canelo, especially the form he's at right now, beats Billy Joe Saunders. Oh, and I got to put my promoter's hat on, Dave, if I may. Cecilia has a couple new sponsors. I wasn't sure how long this was going to go, but Betsson is sponsoring her. It's a betting company in Norway, and also Under Armour. She's wearing the Rocks Under Armour shoes, so I want to give a shout-out to them.
Ever the promoter. Okay, the final rapid-fire question is for Cecilia, and it's from Lisa White, and she asks, you've been in many, many huge world title fights, but is this the most important night of your career?
No, it's one of them. Yeah, it's been so many big fights, and like my first win against Anne-Sophie Matisse, it just skyrocketed my career. My first fight with Vinnie Skovgaard, the Danish girl, the winner. We fought for a contract with Sauerland Promotion to be the yes, and I won that. And the first fight in Norway, of course. So, you know, there's so much. I made my legacy, and Saturday is just for me to take those belts back. I do it just because I know I can.
I hope that you guys have enjoyed this as much as I have. It's really been an honor to sit with all three of you, so thank you very much. That's a wrap for this Fight Week's Matchroom Radio. Don't forget, over in Thailand, we've got Srisakatsor Rungvisai. He's going to fight Sitmarsong live on DAZN before the big one here in Dallas. So we'll be back with more podcasts next week in London. Of course, we have Lawrence Okolie going against Glavatsky for the world title for that fight week. So until then, I'm David Diamante saying so long.